Order. Today's Monday, April 2. Hopefully we all survived the first, 2012. Time is 8:04. Present are Representative Feige, Representative Seaton, Representative Peggy Wilson, Representative Kawasaki, and myself, Representative Alan Dick. We have a quorum. We have four items on the agenda today. A first order of business is an update to a graduation study done by the Mat-Su Borough School District, and SB 170 Vocational Educational Counseling, HB 352 Resource Development Curriculum, and HB 369 Student Participation in Sports. Superintendent Paramo, glad to have you here with us today. Please come forward, introduce yourself for the record, and give your presentation. It's really good to have the face with the voice. It's delightful to have you here.
Thank you, Representative Dick, Chair. My name is Dr. Dina Paramo, and I'm the superintendent of the Mat-Su Borough School District. I had the opportunity, and just speaking with Bruce, to share some of the studies that we have completed in Mat-Su to look at our education system, look at our results, and it's a lot of these are not only in regard to graduation, but also post-graduation. So thank you for this opportunity to share what we've done in Mat-Su with our state. For those of you that aren't familiar with the Matanuska-Susitna Borough School District, we are located 35 miles north of Anchorage alongside the beautiful Matanuska and Susitna Rivers. We span 25,000 square miles. Please know that the Mat-Su Borough School District is the largest employer in the borough, employing 2,500 people. As you may know, last October, we passed the largest school bond ever to be presented in Mat-Su for $214 million, and it provides for six new school sites, as well as maintenance and upgrades to the buildings. We educate 17,500 students, and this is a little bit different than other places, but if you take the last 10 years, our enrollment growth, the mean of that, the average, is 425 students a year, which is, to us, approximately a school a year. Our elementaries are about 400 to 450 students. We operate our programs in 44 different schools, allowing for parent and student choice. And these schools make up everything from a large comprehensive high school. Large to us is 900 to 1300. We don't get any larger than that. And we're not large schools like Anchorage, but we're still pretty large in the same sporting category, you could say, for ASA. We have five large middle schools. We have six small community schools, and they range from 21 students upwards to 49 students in some of these schools. We have six charter schools in our district, as well as schools that we call special mission. Other districts sometimes call them optional schools. These special missions range from, we have a STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics school. We have our career and technical high school, which is a full-scale, four-year program focusing on the trades and let's see what else. We also have a large homeschool, two homeschools actually, and one is about 1,300 students. I'm going to share this information and just to give a little bit of a background. I share this with our local Rotaries, our local Chambers of Commerce, and our local stakeholders. We do want our community to know that if you invest in education, that you will receive a return on your investment. We let them know that having a borough that has educated students with high school diplomas is better than a borough without. We know, the business world knows that, and you can see this in our real estate advertising, that we have whichever school district and whichever school is advertised right in our real estate. So that's important for business. There's evidence. There's also evidence in regard to appropriate use of health care by students or by graduates with high school diplomas. We know, and I know we do have a new prison out there, but the school district does not want to be responsible with putting students into prison, that the prison population has a low literacy rate. We want to be sure that our kids leave us as highly functioning adults. And then, you know, we've kind of said that if you don't educate them, you're going to educate them or you're going to be afraid of them. So educate kids. It is a good investment for you. And this slide just lets a little bit of background about Matsu, about the return on the investment. Last year, about 98% of our kids did graduate with a high school diploma, having passed the high school graduation qualifying exam. And our graduation rate, with the assistance and the work that's at the state level, our graduation rate has increased over the last 6 years, and we've decreased our dropout rate. And we always share also with our stakeholders that if the graduation rate is 70% and the dropout rate is 3.3, somewhere in between, those kids are still engaged in education. It does sometimes take more time to educate children, and we do that. We have kids who are fifth years. Sometimes they call them super seniors, but it's important to us that no matter what the child's age, if they didn't get a go-around, we want to have a program that will engage them back in school so that they can earn their high school diploma. This is just some evidence just on the website, at the state website, actually. Return on investment, Matsu has improved in our standardized testing. I also have the state scores as well. We, the state mean, or the state average rather, we outperform, or we're at the higher end of that average. Now I just have a picture again of that beautiful Matanuska River. And I'm going to pause here just to give a picture of another story that we had in discussing what we've done. And if you could picture yourself on that Matanuska River, on that bank there, and having a picnic, if you will. And this was the story of improvement for us for early education. You can say that we were having a picnic, and I was sitting there with my colleagues who were also educators, and we were having a lovely picnic. And all of a sudden, floating down that river, we see a baby. And there's a baby in the river, and somebody says, there's a baby in the river. So we ran over there, and we grabbed that baby out of the river. So we saved that baby. And then we look again, and there's another baby floating down the river, and then another one. And I get my friends, and we all go in that river, and we save those babies and pull them out. Somebody even suggests, why don't we get a net? There's more and more babies. We can't catch them all. So we get a net, and then we have some professional development on how to use that net, and we grab those babies out of there. But they keep coming. And we had to ask ourselves the question, why are the babies in the river in the first place? And when we did that in Matsu, we found that our early education wasn't as sound as we thought it had been. And I'm going to show you next what we did to pull those babies out of the river. Return on investment in early education, and I know that the state is considering preschools. Matsu is a larger district, so we haven't qualified for any preschool opportunities, that we have a lot of private industry that does that. But if you take a look over 2005, 2006, 2007, 2007 I moved into a the responsibility of being in charge of the curriculum of the Matsu Borough School District. And these scores are grade level scores of students who leave the grade level on grade level, reading on grade level, or pre-reading. So in first grade, only 52%, second was 51, and third was 50. And that just wasn't good enough. That was like taking this room, or our representatives before us, and just splitting them in half and saying, which half of you are going to float down the river, and which half of you are we going to save out of the river? It wasn't good enough. So we did some interventions to find out what we can do. When we improved a little bit, we focused on the help. We focused on when a kid isn't learning in our classes, what do we do? And we improved slightly. But then when I looked at who the kids were, every child that wasn't performing on grade level that we gave assistance to was for performing back on grade level. But by the end of the year, more kids were performing under grade level. So in 2010, we took our curriculum. We had, good, solid curriculum. And then we improved our instruction as well. We moved to an alignment of our instruction. And as you can see, last year, 3/4 of our children left reading on grade level. It was a huge, dramatic increase. Initially, it was thought of taking the freedom of teaching away, but what it really did was have kids ready earlier so that teachers could be creative with their kids and actually do more. The national target for what happens in the general education classroom with just the teacher without any special assistance says that 80% of your kids in the general classroom should be on target with the general education, or you might have heard the core education in the core classroom. We haven't hit that target yet, but we're very near, and we're very proud of those. You can evidence this same result in our special education kids from 3 through 5. For every 3 kids in grades 3 through 5 that we have in special education, we only have 1 in K-2. So we know that in the future, this will trickle up, if you will. So we're that's one of the significant increases we did. So this is the main point of the presentation today that we're proud of, that we'll go back to this river. And if this river was a picture in time, the left side of the river would be when they enter in kindergarten, and the right side of that picture would be their graduation. But I don't know if you know, but our river is, filled with, if you will, by the Matanuska Glacier. It's fed by the Matanuska Glacier that you can't see, and then it moves into the inlet. It leaves us, that river. And so I was presenting data to our assembly and our board, which is in our ordinance that we have to share our data. And after the presentation, someone asked me, so with all these numbers, what does it really mean for kids? What is MATSU really doing for kids? I get the achievement part, but what is that turning into? And so we worked with a company to find out what is our post-school outcomes. What are kids doing? We worked with EED to help fund this through grants. And we want to determine what are the outcomes to post-secondary education for education and employment. And we surveyed 3 different years, students who were 1 year out in 2010, students who were 3 years out in 2008, and then 2010 graduates. To just provide a little bit of insight, this study is on our website, and it has, of course, with any study, probably half of the information that's presented is just about the demographics and the validity of the study. I want to let you know that we have about 1,000 students that graduate each year, and we had a target of 40% of, for this survey, it was a Dillman survey, which is they received a postcard, and then they actually, this company, called each person to find out and ask them a series of 8 to 18 questions. And we worked with Alaska Research and Evaluation Services, which is a third party. None of our employees worked for them. And it was a conduct descriptive relative rates ratio. So what you're going to see is the percentage of kids rather than actual numbers who move on. The data is reliable in that the representative group of the 40% was highly reliable and valid according to the kids that graduated. So we looked at their schools, their demographics, male, female, and they were all pretty sharp. And that information is on our website. But I just wanted to share with you. I've worked in MATSU for 19 years, been in education 21, and I, as an insider, I'm kind of ashamed to say this now, but when we worked with the gentleman who did this, I thought about 40% of our kids went on to higher education. And to my delight, it was actually almost 60%. Yeah. Higher education is defined as 2 to 4 year college, university. Career and technical is more than 90 days, but less than 2 years. Short term is over 30 days, up to 90 days, and no participation were students that did not go into any type of education. We asked them about education, and then we asked them also about employment. Some students went directly into some type of employment rather than education. As you can see, for each group, though, even in the 5 years, we found that there were about 59 to 62% of MATSU kids choose post-secondary higher education. A total of 77% choose some type of education after high school. As you can see, the goal for 2006 was really in the survey to find out what are they doing after they graduate, and we found out that it takes more than 5 years to graduate. As you can see, 27% of the kids in their fifth year are still engaged, and only 20% have graduated. We also asked their employment of all 3 years, 2010, 2008, 2006. We defined a living wage earner making more than $60,000. And this is not a federal definition of living wage. We determined that locally by going to our banks and finding out the average price of a home in Mat-Su is $240,000. You can get a loan for that pretty easily, making over $60,000. So living wage was $60,000 or more. And we did find some information. Those that are doing that are actually in the trades. These are the folks making a living wage right out of high school and 5 years out were all trades. They were welders and builders. Competitively employed is more than minimum wage, working more than 20 hours a week. Some other employment is any job that provides minimum wage. Not working is not unemployed. Not working is choosing not to work. And many of the kids who answered this were not working because they were full-time students, they were parents. Interestingly enough, in 2008, you can see there's a large jump. We found that a lot of our kids go on missions around the world for community service. That's what they had reported. They're either traveling or moving. Unemployed, that red mark, are kids who I guess they're young adults who are looking for a job currently, weren't employed but want to be employed. When you stack these two together, because all of these add up to all the students, you can see that kids in who are working, kids in Mat-Su are working their way through university. So with the employment, we stacked right next to the kids who are also, or young adults rather, also engaged in only higher ed. We just to not make the slide too confusing with too many colors, we didn't include the career and technical education or the short-term education. All we included was higher education. And you can see that in all areas of their choices, students are working. One of the questions we asked in this survey was about Mat-Su. Were you prepared? Do you feel high school prepared you for school or work after graduation? In the first year, it was a high of an affirmative, a somewhat or yes, was 87%. Did believe that they were prepared. The other 2 years were pretty much exactly the same, and so we don't know whether we're doing a better job or whether they're figuring out that life is more that they needed. They didn't really know what they needed to know, but it was 77%, so over three-fourths of our students say that, yes, they were prepared for what they chose to do after graduation. These scores, again, are positive to us, but certainly not the end result that we want to see. The takeaway results that Mat-Su had was that 77% of our graduates go on to post-secondary education, including 2 to 4 year college, career and technical training, and short-term employment training. In 2006, when students were 5 years after graduation, 59 had gone to higher ed, 20% of those graduated, or a third, 28 were still enrolled, and 11 left higher ed. 50% of our graduates are competitively employed 5 years after high school. 14 of those are earning more than $60,000 a year. 77% of our students feel high school prepared them in 2008 and 2006, and 87% felt just 1 year out, which we did this last year, felt that they were prepared. What did this tell us? We did receive anecdotal feedback only if it was repeated over and over again, statistically significant, they reported back to us. And the current programs addressing student post-school success, the one that we added due to this was financial literacy. The kids, when they asked what was it that didn't, what you weren't prepared with, what weren't you happy with, it was actually financial literacy. And from this study, our board put in a graduation requirement of 0.5 credit for civics and financial literacy due to this report. Technical writing was up there. We do in schools a lot of creative writing, and they let us know that they need to move a lot more towards technical writing for the skill areas. We did find that one of the things that they would like to see is some e-learning. When they go to college or off to their work, they do have to take courses, even if it's on-the-job training. A lot of it is delivered electronically, and they didn't have the skills to kind of finish that. So we're preparing a blended model where students in any school in the secondary can go to school, take math with this teacher, science over here. I'm going to go to the cyber center located in my high school and take a cyber class, and then go right back into another class in my high school. So it's not going to be an either or in MATSU. E-learning and traditional learning is going to be and. It's going to be and. Our board is looking at for the freshmen next year that they would have to have graduated with one course, or actually a half a course, if you will, a semester of e-learning. They're looking to change our graduation requirements to include an online course sometime. And it would be a blended course where an adult would teach the child how to get through those courses and to navigate e-learning systems. Finally, Alaska Middle College, when kids reported that they had left, a lot of it was that they just couldn't figure out the system. It wasn't about math or reading. It was too difficult to figure out the registration and the online systems and what they actually needed to be successful. Alaska Middle College was just approved by Commissioner Hanley. It's going to be a partnership with the University of Alaska where students can earn an associate's degree their junior and senior year and also receive a college diploma, a high school diploma, and an associate's degree at the same time. It's a partnership with UA. Our partner, our part of this, our stake in the game is that we won't send them a student who is not ready to go into college level class. So these students are not going to be in remedial school or remedial classes. We'll ensure that they're prepared. And finally, in summary, here's that river again. In MATSU, our board has challenged me personally. They have 12 different goals. 25% of my salary is based on achieving those goals. So my salary is performance-based, and I work hard to do that. But I took their 14 ideas of things that they want to happen, and it's really about innovation. It's about innovation, the true sense of renewing what you do. Does it match the kids of today? Providing choice in schools. Again, we had 44 choices, and they were all very different. It's not just a neighborhood school. It's not just a comprehensive high school. It's not just a charter school or a career tech school. It's lots of different choices. Finally, customer service. The district office customers are our principals and our school teachers. The school's customer, who we need to meet at the district office, is taking away all those road bumps and red tape for people to get the job done, because teachers know how to get the job done. The customers for the teachers are the students and their parents and our outside community. What do they want for their kids in education? And simply enough, our mission is to prepare students for success. And that may be in military, that may be in college, or that may be in a trade, in a skill, in a career. But we strive hard to do those things. So I appreciate your time.
Wonderful presentation, Dr. Paramo. And we do have a full agenda today, but we do have time for a few questions. Representative Sisner.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And my question is that actually your community and its schools, though I come from Anchorage, I nonetheless, in the mid-1990s, so we're talking 20 years ago, and it's kind of horrifying when you start actually looking back and thinking, well, that was just yesterday, but nope. So the thing that had just amazed me about what MATSU was doing was the tie, the career ladder concept, and the fact that you had schools that really had tied education and the jobs together from middle school on. And I actually met with several different educational level people, and I'm not sure now, I'm not remembering who, but I was really impressed with books that actually had what the different choices were from if you took this course, then what you took and what your income would be. So that was happening then. And now you're talking this, which is wonderful, and it sounds beautiful. But this is the same community, and I'm wondering if, in fact, if we went up a level and then have come up another level. And that's one of the problems with committees like this, is that we turn over. It's one of the things that happens. And so you get a real intense look at a school or the schools at a certain time. And that's the way we tend to look at it, instead of, over time, what were the lessons learned? And what did we get in that period that we built on now, and then what happened after that? And somehow keep ourselves looking at it that way. Because I think it would help us all, I think.
Actually, to have it all archived.
Yeah.
Well, you know, part of that fruition of those efforts is really the career and technical high school. We still have career-based programs in all of our high schools, but the career and technical high school is using our money to the best that we can by centralizing classes and really their career pathways. So if you go into the medical pathway, it could be nursing, it could be pharmaceuticals. There's just a choice. And not only a choice, it's not a trade school. They teach both sides, the professional side of the trade and the skills side of the trade, for kids to choose what they like.
Thank you. Representative Kawasaki.
Thanks, Superintendent. A question on the literacy slide dealing with return on investment. I agree. You know, pre-K is probably the way I'd like this to go. But can you tell me other ways? I think we kind of glanced over it, how you changed the curriculum. Did you have any other mechanical changes, like changing the size of the classes and how you utilize private sector pre-K?
We have a couple of pre-K programs, but they are based off of grants through American Indian Alaska Native students. We run two of those, so it's approximately maybe 40 students. We have probably similar to Anchorage, we have quite a few private businesses that do preschools. We partner with those and offer free professional development about what kids will need to know and be able to do in kindergarten. So we share that information and we provide that for free, call them in. We also give them the materials to teach. So at that level, there really aren't student materials. There's teacher materials, big books, things like that, flashcards. We will provide those for any of the preschools that go to our training. We have always had the standards, but what we decided to do was to really look at how the teaching was being done and focused it more on time and or time that we have with kids and what we do with that time. It's not just the span of being in reading for 2 hours as a kindergartner or first grader. It is the movement that happens, the direct instruction that happens. And so we became involved not in just providing what you're supposed to teach, but we also provided the professional development on how you're supposed to teach it to all of our teachers. And we provided guidance through literacy coaches. At that time in 2007, requested from our assembly if they would fund and focus on reading, and they funded 16 additional positions at the time to be literacy coaches. And those literacy coaches were the ones who worked with their colleagues to teach them the skills needed to teach the kids pre-K. We just moved to a more explicit program rather than a holistic program, if you will.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, quick question.
Okay. Tell me, do you think it would make a difference if, and I realize that we get a lot of our teachers from the lower 48, but there's a lot of them that are Alaska teachers. Would it help if there was a change at the university level on how they're taught how to teach?
I would think that it should be what's happening in schools and what schools are charged to. We have a close relationship with UAA. It hasn't always been that way, but we do provide feedback. And when they come into our schools, they will teach the manner in which all of our teachers are held accountable. And so sometimes those don't match, and sometimes they do match. But we work closely and have gotten better at that. So, yes, it does assist us in helping with that.
Thank you, Superintendent. It's exciting to hear that you're doing so well, but I'm just sitting here thinking, if you're doing that well, we have an average, there's people out there that aren't that are doing less well. And though we need to find out what you're doing and try to clone that and make it happen in other places. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next order of business, SB 170, Vocational Education Counseling in Schools. We did hear this bill on March 26th. I think members had an opportunity to hear the have the questions answered. We did close public testimony. What is the will of the committee in regards to SB 170?
Do we need to adopt the SDS? Is it for this development? Okay. All right. All questions answered. Then I'll move LS 1189 /M, SB 170 with the accompanying zero fiscal note and individual recommendations.
And hearing no objection, SB 170 moves from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying zero fiscal note. Okay, next we'll hear HB 352, Resource Curriculum Development. We do have a committee substitute, Representative Pruitt, if you'd move version M.
I move CS for HB 352, version M, dated 3/30/12, Michelle.
And hearing no objection.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, go ahead.
I object for explanation of the change.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Annette, will you explain the changes?
I did see it. Oh, yeah.
Annette Kreitzer, staff to Representative Alan Dick. You have a document in your folders, I think, or it was sent to you electronically. The title of it is HB 352, Resource Education, and it looks like this. And the reason that you have that is to show you that the statute that's being amended, if you haven't had a chance to look, pull the statute book and look at it, is the statute entitled Environmental Education. The changes in the CS are on page one. As you'll remember, there was some discussion from line six of the original bill about basing curriculum development and textbook selection on these constitutional principles. And so page one and textbook selection has been removed, and also from the title. And then on page two, there was discussion about including a similar requirement for the University of Alaska. Obviously, the legislature has delegated a lot of its authority to the Board of Regents, and so that language appears in the Board of Regents' powers and duties and responsibilities on page two of the CS. Beginning the new language beginning on line 9 through line 19, essentially paralleling the language on page 1 for public school.
Okay, comments?
Mr. Chairman, I'd remove my objection for adoption.
Okay, then the CS for HB 352 version M, that version, the CS is adopted. Okay. Now, any questions from committee? We do have people on. Any questions from committee? Okay. We do have people online to testify. No problem. We do have Fred Parody from Barrow. Fred, are you online?
Good morning.
Please identify yourself for the record and who you represent. And give your testimony.
My name is Fred Perry. Okay, I'll go ahead and proceed. It's good to be with you today. For the record, my name is Fred Perry, and I am honored to serve as the Executive Director of the Alaska Miners Association. The Alaska Miners Association is a nonprofit membership organization established in 1939 to represent the mining industry in Alaska, making us one of the oldest trade associations in the state. The Alaska Miners Association is comprised of more than 1,400 individual prospectors, geologists, and engineers, vendors, section dredge operators, small family mines, junior mining companies, and major mining companies. Our members look for and produce gold, silver, platinum, diamonds, lead, zinc, copper, coal, limestone, sand, gravel, crushed stone, armor, rock, and other materials. Our members live and work. Just one second, Mr. Chairman. Casey, you have to be quiet. I'm babysitting my 3-year-old this morning, and today's her birthday. She's quite active. Our members live and work throughout Alaska, Canada, Russia, Mongolia, and the lower 49 states. Turning to the bill before you, HB 352M, as it relates to public school curriculum and textbook restrictions based on science, resource development, and sustained yield principles, it's really straightforward. The Alaska Constitution's General Authority Clause in Section 2 states that the legislature shall provide for the utilization, development, and conservation of all natural resources belonging to the state, including land and waters, for the maximum benefit of its people. More than most other states, Alaska has educators who come from various backgrounds and may, and even likely, may be unfamiliar with Alaska's constitutional directives regarding state resources. Mr. Chairman, in speaking to that particular phrase, I'd like to note for the last 4 years I've served as the Chief Operating Officer of the North Slope Borough School District, who I am not representing today, but in my experience there, our turnover amongst our 172 teachers and the hiring we did from out-of-state job fairs was intense. So more than most other states, we have educators who come from various backgrounds and places, can be unfamiliar with our Constitution, and the purpose of the bill is clearly to state that the curriculum in local schools supports the intent of the Constitution. Educational materials must give parity to the viewpoint of use and development as well as conservation of natural resources. Educational materials should recognize that the economic well-being of the state is totally dependent on careful, sustainable resource development. Thus, the Alaska Miners Association firmly supports the sponsor's efforts to bring balance to the teaching of natural resource issues in the context of Alaska's founding fathers and our Constitution. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you. Any questions from committee? Okay. Also online, we have Michelle Bruner from in Anchorage. Michelle, you there?
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Please identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
For the record, my name is Michelle Brenner. I'm the Executive Director of Alaska Resource Education. I'm here to testify today with regards to HB 352. Alaska Resource Education, formerly AMRF, so many of you may know the organization as AMRF, is a partnership between the State of Alaska Department of Education and private industry. We are a nonprofit organization that focuses on educating students and teachers about Alaska's natural resources using our Alaska Resource Kit and curriculum. The Alaska Resource Kit contains a standards-based, science-focused, interdisciplinary set of curriculum activities and support materials providing K-12 students with information about Alaska's mineral, energy, oil and gas, and forest resources. We deliver our curriculum to educators through our Rock and Roll Around Alaska course, a 500-level, one-credit course offered through the university system statewide. We also educate students through our Minor, and Energy Einstein programs. Our kit materials include items such as a 40 Alaska rock and mineral set, complete with samples of oil and gold, DVDs, CDs, posters, maps, a Sitka spruce cross-section, and other educational materials on Alaska's resources. In the last 3 years, Alaska Resource Education has had 333 teachers take our Rock and Roll Around Alaska course. We've distributed over 640 Alaska resource kits to schools, districts across Alaska, and our education director has visited 116 classrooms, and 172 students have participated in our Minor, and Energy Einstein program statewide. I would like to invite all of you to visit our website to see firsthand a video that students recently made about what minerals mean to them. We are interested in this legislation because ARE is consistently providing resource education on a daily basis throughout Alaska. The strength of ARE's program is that it is a partnership between the private and public sectors. Our experience in the classroom is that our educational system is saturated with environmental and conservation education that does not necessarily follow Alaska's constitutional principles. The idea of HB 352 would assist in adding balance to the classroom and to Alaska's future employees and policymakers. With regard to HB 352, our board has not had time to review the actual legislation and has not taken an official action specifically regarding HB 352, but the overall concept I believe ARE would support. We would suggest that as you think about how to provide a science-based curriculum based on Alaska's constitutional principles, that you consider utilization of existing curriculum that meets this criteria. This concludes my prepared remarks today, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions from committee? Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that. We need to hear that. Also in the Anchorage LAO, we have Marliana Hall. Marliana, are you there?
I am. Thank you.
Please identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
My name is Marliana Hall. I'm a projects coordinator at the Resource Development Council. Good morning, Chairman Dick and members of the House Education Committee. In brief, RDC is a statewide business association with members in forestry, oil and gas, mining, tourism, fishing, all 12 native regional corporations, and many others. Our mission is to grow Alaska through responsible resource development. First, I want to thank Representative Dick for introducing HB 352, an Active Garden Resource Development Curriculum in Alaska Schools. RDC recognizes Section 8.1 of the Alaska State Constitution, which Mr. Parody spoke to already, but I want to mention that RDC supports programs educating students on Alaska's natural resources and specifically on the responsible development of our resources. It is a written policy of RDC to support programs, including Alaska Resource Education, to educate students and the general public on responsible resource development activities in Alaska. You've already heard about ARE this morning, so I will not repeat details about their mission to educate students about Alaska's natural resources. I would like to note that it is somewhat appalling that incorporating resource development in the curriculum isn't mandated, while conservation education is. Alaska's education curriculum should include educating our students on activities related to and the responsible development of our natural resources. Future generations of Alaskans should have access to a firm foundation of our constitutional principles that guide our state, including multiple use of resources and land, alongside conservation education. Thank you again, Representative Dick, for recognizing the shortcoming in Alaska's curriculum and for proposing HB 352, which will help provide more balance in educational curriculum in our schools. In addition to my comments today, we'll support a formal letter. Thank you again for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you. Any other questions from committee? Representative Cisna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to get myself into the right place here. I'm looking at this, and I certainly, and we've had this discussion in the past, really need to bring in science, need to bring in what's really happening community by community, and to understand what resources exist. And sustained yield. But there's something about this that I'm kind of finding a bit troubling, and it's, and I'm trying to find it. It's on page, one, I believe. Darn it, excuse me. It's talking about, it's actually on page 2. Line 18, scientific principles without bias and without regard to personal opinion. And it applies to science only. And yet, in fact, what I know is that personal opinion and bias goes to all of us. Mm-hmm. And it actually would fit with each one of these. If, in fact, working on, you might have a small share, say, in a company that's planning on putting in a mine somewhere, mm-hmm. you might have a bias. Mm-hmm. And so I would wonder if there weren't a way to maybe have, without bias and without regard to personal opinion, apply to all of these. Because that's, in fact, what we are as human, and we tend to have our biases. And the first Alaskans developed over thousands of years a sustained yield that was pretty conservative. They actually didn't hunt for more than they actually needed and were going to consume, for instance. We're going to be thinking of the market, so we're going to want to be doing more than that. But what we've seen in this Western time here in Alaska is fishing out whole special fishery industries. I'm thinking of crabs, other seafood that we've had where we've gone through them too rapidly, and suddenly you no longer are fishing halibut. Suddenly we have smaller halibut, and that's kind of the most current thing that has seen. So I think that maybe we could look at this, looking at it in a balanced way and a non-prejudiced way across all of the things we teach in school. Would that be something to consider?
Representative Sisson, I think that's something to consider. I wouldn't know quite how to put it in this bill. Representative Kawasaki. Yeah,
this is actually a question for the person online. Or more of a statement, or I guess it's a question. If in the current Section 380 dealing with education, it does actually say that education, there's a need to balance both resource development and environmental safeguards, and then continues on to talk about the dependence of the state on resource development. So that is something that's currently taught to school-age children, K through 12. So that's just for the person that was speaking last.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Sisna.
Thank you. Actually, the comment by Representative Kawasaki made me think, actually looking at this, to have the without bias and without regard to personal opinion behind the scientific principles in B on page 2, line 18, I think taking that out would make it seem more reasonable because, yeah, we should be teaching it all without bias and without regard to personal opinion. And putting it just by scientific sounds a little spooky to me.
Representative Sisson, I think the intent here, we as legislators, we need to be very careful that there aren't unintended consequences down the road.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, the intent of this bill isn't to the attendance bill is like a 50,000-foot concept, excuse me, making certain that, and the overall, that that there is a parity. I think that's the correct word, parity, as we talk about conservation and resource development and use. And the use, of course, refers to the traditional uses, by the, the First Nations people here in Alaska. The intent of the bill wasn't to get down and start micromanaging, but the intent of the bill was just to speak to the larger picture. Comments from committee.
Are we on public testimony, or are we?
I think there was a question from Arlena, wasn't there?
For her? Okay, forgive me. Marliana, are you still there? I didn't recognize the question.
I am here.
Okay. Was it Representative Kawasaki? You had a question?
It was more, Mr. Chairman, just the statement that under the Section 380 that we're amending, it does talk about resource development and balancing and the dependence of the state on resource development. So it's part of the law already.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thank you. any other question from Marliana?
No.
Okay. Also online, Representative Sisson, we won't forget your comments. Janice Daw, are you online from Fairbanks?
Yes, thank you so much, and thanks for taking my public comment.
Please identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Okay, my name is Janice Daw. I am from Fairbanks, Alaska. I am testifying as a private citizen, but am also doing so in my testimony to draw attention to certain points of overlap between HB 352 and a CAPSIS project that is now being discussed in state finance that I'm part of, and that is, it's called BACLAP, Boreal Alaska Learning adaptation production. And if funded, it would bring money to the Department of Natural Resources, and then several of us at the university, including Glenn G. Bay and myself, would be working to implement that project. And it's that project that has a lot of overlap. So if I can let my testimony speak to that, is that okay to just talk to how BACLAP and 352 are in sync?
I don't think we want to talk about a CAPSIS project, but we do want to speak to the focus of the bill. And the focus of the bill is the whole issue of, as curriculum is taught in school, that there's parity that reflects the Constitution.
Well, I would be in total agreement that providing curriculum, making every opportunity to provide integrated curriculum that uses the framework of the Alaska Constitution, Article 8, that defines sustained yield natural resource management for all the purposes of maintaining, promoting, and using those resources, but that's a great framework, and that's the framework in which we present material now in K-12 schools. So it's that idea of presenting curriculum and having K-12 students learn about the biological basis of forest resources, and then hands-on learning how to work with them, with their hands, to make things, and then learning also how to do science experiments, so that they can get wrapped in as participants in natural resource management. That's what we're trying to do in a school program and have been doing for the last 2 years, called One Tree. And so the students do become stewards and understand what the natural resource management principles are, because they're involved in doing it. They're involved in using the forest resources directly. We harvest a tree. The students make things out of that tree. They develop ideas for how they can sell their product at market. And so they're getting involved. And in that involvement, we talk about sustained yield principles and sustainable forest management.
Okay. Thank you, Janice. Yeah, I'm becoming familiar with your work, and I think it's directly right in line with what this bill speaks to. I think you're probably ahead of legislators in that regard. Any comment or question from committee towards to Janice? Okay.
Representative
Dick? Go ahead, Janice.
Please, I just wanted to say that I would have called in earlier, but we've been trying to get some materials printed off at OfficeMax and Juno and get them to your committee. I see now that we're too late to do that, but we will go ahead and get the material that has to do with my testimony today and with this CAPSIS proposal that I mentioned. We'll get it to, if it would be okay, to get it to you.
Absolutely. I wish everybody had your level of dedication. So, yes, make sure get it to my staff, and I'll make sure that information gets to all the committee members.
Okay, thanks. We'll make a copy for each member in fact. Thank you.
Thank you, Janice. Appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, any other comments from committee?
Are we closed public testimony?
We're looking. No other? Okay, we will close public testimony. And Commerce Committee, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I appreciate the committee with adopting the amendment for the one unintended consequence that I was talking about before on textbooks. However, you know, I'm concerned with this bill because, first of all, I haven't received any comments over the 10 years I've been in the legislature that have said that, from my district, that environmental education should be drastically changed or limited. And that's what I see this bill doing. The current bill, again, reads, that's 143380, the board shall encourage each school board to initiate and conduct a program of environmental education for kindergarten through grade 12. The program should include, but not limited to, education regarding the need to balance resource development with environmental safeguards, the dependence of the state on resource development, and the opportunity for pollution prevention, waste reduction, and recycling. And the school board may implement environmental education as part of the regular classroom studies. Mm-hmm. So I think it's pretty clear that the current statute says you're going to balance, you're going to consider development, resource development in all aspects, and you're also going to include pollution prevention, waste reduction, and recycling, et cetera. My problem with the bill is that the bill is now going to modify that and say that in developing a curriculum, a school district shall base their curriculum on, and I'm mostly concerned with under 1B, the principle of utilization and development of all non-renewable resources, in addition to encouraging the balancing of resource development, conservation, and under the study. So what I'm seeing is a total shift in saying, as you develop your curriculum, it must be based on utilization and development of all non-renewable resources. And I think that from what I've seen in my conversations across the state, we have resource development community, AMRF, we have minerals, we have timber, we have those people participating, helping supply materials for resource development issues. But much of what happens in environmental education is looking at what's happening today and what is important. I've had five girls that went from Homer High School, developed a program for waste reduction. What they did is they said, hey, we're using all these paper plates and all this stuff in the schools, and they got the community involved. They actually changed, so now they're using washing and recyclables, and actually they were one from each of the 50 states that went back, and they met the President of the United States a year ago, were given recognition for community activity of starting waste reduction. Now, one of my colleagues from southeast here would probably be opposed to that because it's not utilizing paper and tree materials like he would like to see more timber harvesting and paper. And he's told us that before. He wants to see more paper used, right, because it supports the industry in southeast Alaska. I don't want to get into, and that's kind of a long stretch of an example. I see the example much more in Section B, where it's utilization and development of all non-renewable resources. Because when we were talking about that, I worry about St. Mary's. St. Mary's gave us a presentation a long time ago, and their entire curriculum of environment was based on the local usage of moose hunting and fishing and seal hunting, and then in the even beluga hunt was in the senior. And I can see a situation in which we just had testimony from someone from the North Slope who was involved in mining. And if there was a mine proposed at the headwaters of areas up there, and we have a statute that says your curriculum must be based on, shall be based on, utilization and development of all non-renewable resources. In addition to those things, I think that we run the problem of having a person or two in a district coming and saying, you cannot be teaching this curriculum that says we want to maintain all of this because we must have the utilization and development of all non-renewable resources, and there's this non-renewable resources in this area, and we must base the environmental curriculum on the utilization and development of those non-renewable resources. So, and Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to try and hold the bill up, but you know, I can't support it because I haven't seen it in my community. In fact, we have a natural resources committee, or natural resources class that's given in conjunction with the Soil and Water Conservation District. And that group of students that has gone through, you know, it's about 8 years, they've gone twice to the Nat and won the National Envirothon, it's called, once in Cincinnati, Ohio, and once in Arizona. And if they were basing that based on mining and Homer or those kind of things, I think that, and I don't want to pick on mining, I just want to say that I think that this changes dramatically the question of environmental education. And also I think that what we're doing with saying you can't use your opinion, I think that that's where we get dynamic teaching in the classroom. When we have people come in, you teach what you're enthusiastic about. And whether it's, you know, global warming or it's acid acidification of our oceans or those kind of things, those aren't necessarily basing a environmental education curriculum on development of those resources. So, Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to explain why I see some potential unintended consequences for changing and specifying so much 1433-80 to these two things of what every school district must base that curriculum on. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. For sure.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually don't see it that way. It's not because I live down in Southeast. It's that we do see in some areas, all that's saying is they can still teach that. They can teach that without any problem, but they just need to teach at the same time that there is another side of that coin. And, you know, even if the teacher says, now I want you to know that because the Constitution says this, you know, she has to tell the other side of the story. And so that's all this really does. And so people can do what they're doing now without any problem. But they just need to let the kids know that there's two ways to think about the same situation. And there's nothing wrong with trying to, we all want conservation. We want all our environment to be as good as it can be. But sometimes it's neglected that also, and I think a big thing that I see is when I see students at the university come to us and want more money and demand more money many times, but at the same time they don't want us to use our natural resources, and that's where our money comes from. And so I think that kids need to see both sides of the story and understand what's happening in Alaska and how Alaska is different from other states.
And on that point,
Representative Seaman.
Thank you, and I totally agree, and I think that 1433-80 tells us that already. However, this says that the school district shall base the curriculum on utilization and development of all non-renewable resources, in addition to encouraging balancing that resource development with conservation. So to me, we have changed environmental education to resource development education, although you can balance that with conservation. So it seems to me that we have changed quite a bit a standard that says teaching environmental education to teaching resource development. And that's all I'm pointing out. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Puggy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Must be the hat. I tend to agree with Representative Wilson. Any time you don't teach both sides of the story, you're not truly providing education. You're simply providing propaganda. I think it's important that kids receive some introduction to both sides of the story here. And, you know, as she so eloquently described, we are concerned about conservation. We are concerned about the environment, and modern resource extraction methods take that into account. Our permitting process takes that into account, and folks coming up through the education system need to learn about that. So I don't see this as a restriction on any kind of environmental teachings, but it is good for those folks to get both sides of the story. It'll result in better educated folks that will be more competent to make their own decisions based on a balanced introduction to the subject matter. So I'll support the bill, and hope you all do too.
Mr. Chair?
Excuse me, Representative Kawasaki, then Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand where this bill's headed, but, again, reading the Article 8 under education, I don't know why currently there isn't more diversity in teaching at the K-12 level, and I don't know that I've heard from anybody outside of a handful of folks that have said that they think it's being taught one way but not the other. But this certainly changes the language of what's currently in here. Currently the program, it says, is not limited, it should include but not limited to, regarding education, the need to balance resource development and environmental safeguards. I think that's fair. I think it does show that there are not necessarily two sides, but a lot of gray area in between. We want our kids to be able to graduate from high school and from junior highs and K-12 with refining the idea that they're critical thinkers and that they can think on their own, and that if they hear about a mining project opening up in their neighborhood, that they don't immediately go against it, or they don't immediately support it if it's in somebody else's neighborhood. We want them to have the critical thought there so that they can take it one step at a time. One of the reasons that why I object to the bill has to do with the language of the constitutional principles, because I think we've sort of bastardized the constitutional principles just in reading this, and I carry my constitution everywhere I go. So I have the Article 8 under natural resources, and this might just be a paraphrase, or it might have been an intentional change in what the Constitution says, but the general authority given under Article 8, Section 2 says that we shall provide for utilization, development, and conservation of all natural resources of the state, and we've sort of relegated the conservation to the fourth tier of the second section there. And we talk about sustained yield, fish, forests, grasslands, and all other replenishable renewable resources belong to the state, should be utilized, developed, maintained on a sustained yield principle. And again, we seem to have changed the wording around, which makes an entirely different thought pattern. I support the underlying bill. I think that kids should know the constitutional tenets, Article 8. I think that kids should be able to have critical thought when they get out of high school and into college. And I don't know that this bill gets us there, though. I'm concerned it won't.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Sisson.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Representative Wilson, for talking about the Constitution, because that got us, because, in fact, we need to keep going back to it, and then getting two other people talking about the Constitution is important. Our Constitution really does start with the people of the state. That's what it really does start with. And the fact that this is why our government exists is for the people. And so one of the things that in this, and I just kind of, to me, what's missing here is an act establishing curriculum restrictions based on science, resource development, and human development. Human resource development is, to me, what I keep hearing as being the huge problem throughout Alaska, is we're not getting our students awoken to the fact that they are the most critical resource that we do have in the state, and that it's they're prospering by in some way developing their own resources, and that's going to be intertwined with the environment that they live in. But that's what the school is there for, is to show them the many ways. And it's not necessarily going to be the natural environment itself. It might be developing their own tourism, for instance. We're not really talking about tourism and the other kinds of things. Their graphic and their writing skills, all of those kinds of things are jobs. And in fact, we live in an environment that really does that. We're really more brain-oriented now in terms of where the big industries are. It's really what humans are thinking of. And our students they have it. They have it. So I'd want the resources that we're talking about to be human as well as all the others.
Thank you, Representative Sisson. I agree with you totally, but that isn't I don't think that's what this portion of the Constitution refers to. The students certainly are the primary resource, and that's why we are on the Education Committee. But
we're not getting there.
I don't see them as renewable or non-renewable resources, and that's what this speaks to. I think that's what we're focusing. You see, my concern is when we talk about utilization, my concern, and I have had constituent, it was because of constituents that I initiated this bill. When we talk about utilization, we're really talking about a major component of that is subsistence, utilization. So that was part of the intent of this bill, was to acknowledge the traditional and the contemporary utilization of resources by the First Nations people. Representative Pruitt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, one of the things that reason I like this bill is because I think in 1433-80, we've already focused on the environmental side of things. And it also says, and because we look in here and it makes comments that we should, the need to balance resource development with environmental safeguards, hence the state on the opportunity for pollution prevention, waste reduction, recycling. I mean, we kind of have a little bit of focus there. I think what was necessary is then to make sure that we have that discussion on the utilization and the maintenance of our renewable, as well as the utilization and development of the non-renewable. And I think you did what you needed to in this new section that you've written by making sure that you've got the balancing portion in there. Because we have to make sure that tomorrow's leaders, today's students, understand the impact of the renewable and non-renewable resources on our livelihoods, whether it be the jobs that they have, whether it be the money that's going into the state. Without a full understanding of what's necessary, I think, and Representative Wilson hit on it, it's kind of the concept of, you know, we'd like to see X take place in our school system, or we'd like to see this program implemented, or this or that. But then maybe there's not a full understanding of what gives them the ability to have that program. I think we need to make sure that it's clear. We're trying to, of course, I'm on the Fiscal Policy Committee, and we're trying to get that that conversation going. Do Alaskans truly understand where the money in the state comes from, where it goes, those kinds of things? This, I think, will help. Start at the younger level and help people help the kids coming out understand where the money comes from while still balancing the conservation aspect, which is something that I still agree we have to be focused on. A recent study came out that said that most millennials, so most kids just coming out of the school system, do not have the they are not as focused on in conservation or on making sure that they're protecting their environment like previous generations were. So obviously there's a need to make sure that aspect is included into it. And I think the balancing, that's why I support this. You have in there, you specifically noted out, balance them both. We've got to talk about them both. We've focused on the environmental portion. We've got that in statute. Let's make sure that we also have the resource portion itself in the statute. So I appreciate you bringing it forward, and I will support it for you. Or with you.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm just going to bring it up but since you brought it up, dealing with rural and subsistence, is it also a policy that one of the constitutional principles, since it was discussed here at the committee level, are we talking about a rural subsistence priority or preference? It is part of it's written in the Constitution. It's a gray area, but this committee just brought it up, so.
I would hope not. Nobody, my mind never, I don't think anybody, this has nothing to do with the rural subsistence priority. It does have everything to do with people becoming aware of the broad spectrum of uses and needs within the state. Representative Sisna.
Thank you. I just thought of another area that I do have concerns about the way this is written. And we are not mentioning human resources. We don't really think in terms of human resources when we're really talking about a lot of our educational issues. And what we still are, because our primary income, it's 90%, whatever it is. It's more than 90%, isn't it? Comes from multinational corporation development of our personal resource. But it's multinational. And if you were to look at the amount of money that comes in to help us understand what's important in our state, it's going to come in from those multinational corporations. And renewable energy, for instance, and we've just had Commonwealth North just put out their report talking about how rural Alaska has been absolutely crippled by the fact of because of the dependency they have on diesel fuel, which is the most expensive form of fuel that you can have. And that becomes actually a political issue. And that's why, if in fact we're looking at renewable versus non-renewable, we have a discussion going on here that I'd prefer not to have. I'd prefer to have us have a discussion on how do we get jobs in throughout Alaska in every community. And that means that you look at the way to develop things in each community that do develop energy. And there is energy every single place in Alaska that can be developed. We're not there. We're sort of starting it. And if you go to the meeting I'm going to be going to in a couple of weeks, that's on renewable energy, it's got community members from all over the state that go to it. We don't really see any of that here enough. We see the parts that make huge money for the state. But we've got to start thinking about the people of the state, so that they all can be part of the making the money, just as the Constitution. That's one of the beautiful things that is right in the beginning. It's through our own labor. We need to really incentivize that. And I think the way this is worded could change that by putting in a bias, just as it puts by science. Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Sisson, are you suggesting an amendment?
Yeah. I wouldn't mind an amendment at all. And there might be somebody better at doing an amendment than me, but I'd like to see human and resource development.
Where? Page what, line what?
On the title, line one. And I'd like to see it also in the next place and I'd like to remove also, and it's actually I hadn't noticed it's on line one, page two, removing the without bias and without regard to personal opinion, and leaving scientific principles, comma, and do the same thing, and I don't know if we speak of all of the resources, balancing, then on line 16, page 2, if I've got it right.
Is that, are you moving an amendment? Because I'll object.
Go for it.
Okay. And I'm just, I guess because I'm objectionable, would you mind calling?
You're objecting to what?
I'm just objecting because I'm objectable, I guess. I mean, I just think, I think scientific principles, I mean, you mentioned pulling that out. Anything that includes pulling that particular line out there, I'll object to.
Are you saying on page 1,
Page 2, line 1, scientific principles without bias. And
okay,
without regard.
Excuse me, let's, Representative Sisna, do you have line, page 1, line 1, you want to make a conceptual amendment?
Yes, conceptual, saying human and resource development.
Okay.
I'll keep my objection.
Okay.
Actually, let me make that amendment as one amendment.
Okay, that's the first, okay, human and resource human resource development. There's an objection.
I'll maintain the objection.
Maintain the objection. Comment? Can we call roll? Representative Kawasaki.
My comment is that I don't know if it fits appropriately in this particular piece of legislation, and so I would probably object to it also.
I think it's an excellent thought, but I don't think this is the place for it.
The place for it.
Do you want to?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'll put it forward, and people okay, can we, vote against it.
Okay. Can we call roll? Mm-hmm.
This is Amendment 1 to HB 352. Representative Seaton.
No.
Representative Feige?
No.
Representative Pruitt?
No.
Representative
Sisna? Yes.
Representative Kawasaki?
Yes.
Oh, thank
Representative
you.
Wilson?
No.
Two yeas.
You didn't ask me.
Did you
get Representative Sisna? No. Okay. Representative Sisna, do you have a second conceptual amendment?
Thank you so very much. And my second amendment would be...
We have to move on here.
My second amendment would be page 2, line 1, removing without bias and without regard to personal opinion. On that is on both line 1 and 2 on the second page. And removing... line 18, the without bias and without regard to personal opinion, removing those words from that line, and okay. Then continuing to line.
Representative Pruitt, do you still maintain your objection?
Yep, I'm objecting.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I view the language as very problematic because, as you and I both know in science, there's nothing that's without bias and personal opinion. Science is not a line in which you have one side and another. Science is a discussion based on many factors, and I think that with this language in there, what we are doing is saying that basically, you're going to have arguments anytime you're developing anything because, let's say, you're talking about ocean acidification, global warming, waste reduction, conservation versus utilization, and which gains you the most in energy. All of those things are going to be accused of, oh, well, you have a bias for this or that, based on science. I mean, because scientists don't agree. And as long as you have somebody not agreeing, you're going to have, just like we have a, have books and books on both sides of the issue on global warming. So does that mean global warming cannot be a subject at all because either side is going to be biased? And so I think that if we have scientific principles, that means there has to have data to support it. But we should take this, these words out of there because I don't think they're going to be helpful to the discussion.
Okay, Representative Pruitt.
I'll speak to kind of a little bit more on my objection. I had a professor when I was in college that I think did a very good job of remaining unbiased in speaking to both sides of it was actually a geography professor. I think it can be done. There are definitely people out there that have a bias on things, because I had another professor that was the exact opposite. It was a science professor. On his particular issue, he called anyone who opposed his view an idiot. So it can be done where they speak to the point of being unbiased, and I think it's kind of on us to make sure that we say you need to be like the professor I had, who said, here are the two issues, here are the two sides of the issues. Now it's on you as an individual to have the critical thinking that hopefully we've done a good job of preparing you to think on your own. And I think that's why I object to it. It needs to be unbiased. We need to have it there.
In my mind, what we're not saying that we can't talk about controversial issues. We're saying that when controversial issues are discussed, that that the authority in that position is not is presenting without bias. You know, this is one view and this is the other view. Representative Kawasaki, do you have another call?
Yeah, I don't know how to look at this, but I'll just remind folks that at one point in time, the world was flat, and there were a lot of theories back and forth, and there was bias in each of them. And I don't know how to read this amendment, really. I think it's problematic just because of the way the text is written and the rest of the bill, but... I guess that's
okay. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd bring back to, we're not talking about discussions in education in a classroom. We're talking here about the development of a curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know how you go about the development of curriculum if you can't just base it on science. You have to say, okay, now, is that science, which side, you know, how do we develop that curriculum? So
Okay. Any other comment on Amendment Number 2? Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And once again, the bill is about the balanced delivery of resource education and environmental education. Sure, scientific principles, probably by their very definition, have already, scientific principle is something that is almost universally accepted, because it's been through a process of peer review, it's withstood the test of time, whatever. However, I think it's important to leave the without bias and without regard to personal opinion in the statute, because then it ensures that, as Representative Pruitt stated, that it's much more likely that both sides of a particularly contentious issue will be delivered to the student, and once again, maintaining the balance of education.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
I think it's very important that we have something like this in today's world, because it used to be that we taught kids to memorize things, and now we're teaching them to think. And we have to teach them to think for themselves, and so in order to do that, you have to kind of have both sides of each situation so that they can make their own decisions. So I think this is important.
Okay. With no further discussion, Secretary, please call roll on Amendment Number 2.
Amendment 2 to HB 352, Representative Pruitt.
No.
Representative Sisna.
Yes.
Representative Kawasaki.
No.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Representative Seaton.
Yes.
Representative Feige.
No.
Chair Dick.
No.
I have two yays, five nays.
Okay. With that, Representative Kawasaki.
I have an amendment.
Oh, okay.
I have an amendment, a conceptual amendment, in Section 1, Line 9. The amendment will read, utilization, maintenance, and sustained yield of all renewable would be the additional word. Natural resources belonging to the state, including fish, forest, wildlife, land, water, deleting in line 11 and other renewable resources.
Okay, I'll object for the sake of the discussion. Okay.
And the reason why I wanted this specifically, I think that if we are teaching a constitutional principle, we can take it from the Constitution, and what we've done here is sort of, again, I think, diminished what the Constitution says. What this amendment does is basically mirror Article 8, Section 4 under the sustained yield principles, and also take in part of the general authority granted in Article 8, Section 2 under natural resources. And so that's why I'd like to see it. And I guess, Mr. Chairman, also that the amendment, since it's conceptual, would also apply to Section 2 under the university. So the language would basically mirror
Section 2, line what?
Page 2, line 12, 13, and 14. Because it's basically a mirror language.
I object.
He's already got an objection.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Comments by committee. Representative Wilson.
I'm not sure. You've changed A, and there's an A and a B. And a, B already talks about the non-renewable resources. And A is about the other resources. So I will vote against it.
Okay, Representative Kovacsak.
To address that, Mr. Through the chair, I do actually have a second amendment dealing with Article B. This one applies in Section A, applies specifically to the sustained yield principle, and is language that's almost like Article 8, Section 4, but again, it's a little bit different, so that's why I've really only changed the order of this. The second one, I guarantee you, will be more controversial.
Okay. Comments by committee?
I don't see any reason to change it, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Troy?
Yeah, I would actually be in this. I understand, of course, when we're creating statute, many times the wording of things can dramatically affect me, what takes place. I think in this case, this is a little bit of kind of potato. We've already we're stating a few. We're putting and other renewable resources. I think we've already said that we've already kind of addressed the point to which we need, and I don't see any reason to change it.
It mirrors the Constitution. And if we are trying to teach a constitutional principle and we want to adopt a policy that says that scientific and resource development curriculum ought to be under a sustained yield principle, then that means that we probably should just put in the wording from the Constitution. That's exactly what I've done in this case.
Ken, brief at ease.
It's...
Minnie.
Ready to vote at this point. Call the question.
Okay. Call roll.
For Amendment 3, HB 352, Representative Feige.
No.
Representative Pruitt.
No.
Representative Sisna.
Yes.
Representative Kawasaki.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Representative Seaton.
Yes.
Chair Dick.
No.
I have 3 yeas, 4 nays.
Okay, Representative Kawasaki, another amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Amendment, I guess it would be conceptual amendment number 4, is to page 1, line 12. The amendment would read, starting in line 12, utilization, comma, development, and conservation of all natural resources, and then strike line 13, and in line 14 it would read, including land and water for the maximum benefit of its people. So that, I'm sorry, let me reread it. Okay, so it would read, utilization, development, and conservation of all natural resources, including land and water, for the maximum benefit of its people. And then it would also, conforming amendment, conceptual conforming amendment would be on line 15, 16, and 17 on page 2.
I'll object.
Okay. Comment by committee.
Oh, can I speak to
this? Go ahead.
Again, Mr. Chairman, we're trying to say that we want to teach constitutional principles under Article 8, under natural resources. This is the specific language of the Constitution. The specific language under Article 8, Section 2, under general authority, says that we should provide for the utilization, development, and conservation of all natural resources belonging to the state. I admitted that, including land and water for the maximum benefit of its people. I think it's very clearly stated in the Constitution, and if we're adopting a constitutional principle, I think it should read like it says.
Okay.
Representative Pruitt?
Constitution is a guideline. We write statutes that then expand from the Constitution. If we need to change this, then we need to change 1430, 380. I think we're doing exactly what the Constitution wanted in expanding on the basic framework that's there. I think what you've just stated, lack of a better term, neuters this. We just need to. I think this is good language. I think it's been worked out very well. I think we should stick with it. So I'll leave it at that.
Representative Wilson.
It takes out the balance, and that's what we need, because some areas it's been being done very well, as we've heard, but obviously there's some areas that's not happening, and I personally want to see the balance, so I'll be against this amendment.
Yeah. Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I speak in support of the amendment, because it not only is from the Constitution, but it also comes from a period when the Constitution was read and the state of Alaska had just come through what was kind of a boom. I mean, it's been boom and bust and boom and bust in the state of Alaska. And the people who were writing the Constitution had the balance because they had seen it themselves. And we are right now in one kind of boom. We're kind of on the side where we've got to go somewhere. And the Constitution was really laying out a direction that was really focused on the people of the state and a way to actually get to where they, I think, saw us go, and that was really looking at all of the resources of the state, of everyone, and figuring out a balanced way to have it happen. I go with the Constitution.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to oppose the amendment. I think that, you know, we are amending 380, which currently is environmental education. I think going to utilization, development, and conservation of all resources takes us to, I think this bill changes the title. I mean, this bill changes, basically, should change the title of the entire section that were of 1430, 380 anyway, but I think that this would further that, and so I'll oppose it.
Okay. Any other comments from committee? Representative Kawasaki.
Again, you know, I don't want to neuter my colleague over there, but, you know, this is the Constitution we're talking about. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and we're talking about constitutional principles in this particular curriculum. I'm happy with that. I'm okay with that. The Constitution, again, should be the highest law of the land, and to make an interpretation on what you think it is and put it in a general law is, I think it's a sad day when we start to do that.
Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In this section, you've got under subparagraph 1, you've got two subparagraphs. One talks about renewable resources, one talks about non-renewable resources. It's not our job to rewrite the Constitution. It's It's our job to translate the Constitution into reality. So, I oppose the amendment.
Okay. Call roll.
For Amendment 4, HB 352, Representative Seaton.
No.
Representative Feige.
No.
Representative Pruitt.
Nope.
Representative Cisna.
Yes.
Representative Kawasaki.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Chair Day.
No.
2 yeas, 5 nays.
Okay, we have before us CSHB 352 version M. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just, on this bill, I think that what we've done by adding these subsections to 380 has actually changed 380, and it should be retitled really Resource Development Education. Because that's what we have said, whether we want to talk about utilization, maintenance, sustained yield, or whether utilization, development of all non-renewable resources. And by the way, you can balance that with some environmental or conservation principles. So I think that we are actually changing the entire first section of 380 to resource development education in the classrooms instead of environmental education classrooms. So that's why, although I'm not going to hold the bill or attempt to, I won't be supporting.
Representative Kawasaki.
I just wanted to make a comment after what was just said about the Constitution that it's not the legislature's decision on how to interpret the Constitution. That's the judiciary's responsibility, the judiciary's role. We're supposed to follow the Constitution. We're putting laws, again, in here that say that this is a constitutional principle, but again, we've bastardized the language of the Constitution and added this into the school curriculum. I have no problem with the bill on surface. I think that we should teach kids balanced education so that they can make good critical decisions and that there is a lot of gray area. But again, I'm not going to oppose moving the bill either, but I just had to make that statement. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kawasaki. And if I'd written this, we'd all be in trouble. But it was written by Ledge Legal, and I assume that that Jean Michel was on top of all the issues. Okay, Representative Pruitt.
Mr. Chair, I move CS for HB 352, which is version M, Michelle, from committee with individual recommendations accompanying zero fiscal note.
Object.
Okay, objection. Okay, call roll.
Call
it. For
yes.
Representative Christopher.
No.
Representative Kawasaki.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Smith.
Yes.
Representative Feige.
Yes.
Chair Dick.
Yes.
I have 6 days, 1 name.
Okay, brief at ease.
Let me just say that.
Version M moves out of committee.
At ease.
Committee back to order. Here we go. Watch that red light. Next we'll hear HB 369, Student Participation in Sports. Representative Dan Sattler is here to present the bill. Welcome, sir. And please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Dan Sattler, Representative House District 18, Chugach River, J. Bear. Thank you this morning for hearing House Bill 363, Student Participation in Sports. Mr. Chairman, there is significant research in the packet here showing that students who play high school sports simply do better at school and in life. They're healthier, they get better grades, they attend and graduate at higher rates, they learn important lessons, the benefits go on and on. It's important, therefore, to encourage all Alaska high schoolers who want to play sports and to play them safely, whether they are enrolled in traditional public schools or in the increasing range of innovative alternative educational programs, including homeschools. This bill has two main goals. The first is laid out in Section 1. It's to strengthen provisions in last year's legislation, House Bill 15, to protect student-athletes against concussions. The second, in Section 2, is to clarify how students can participate in high school athletics if they are not enrolled in a public school. Now, to combine this, I guess, with a sectional analysis, Section 1, House Bill 15, passed last year, sponsored by Representative Dugan, requires high school students who are athletes who might have gotten a concussion or head trauma to be examined by a qualified medical person and declared okay to play before they could rejoin the game. The model bill language underlying this law required that a provider had to be certified to approve a student's return to the game. However, Alaska has no provisions for such certification, and so that language is unnecessary, and HB 369 deletes that from the law. The bill also does expand the anti-concussion protection from covering not just games, but also practices, which, as those of us who played sports know, can be just as vigorous as the games themselves. Mr. Chair, in Section 2, many Alaska families do choose to teach their children at home or in other alternative schools. And frankly, I've been quite impressed with the dedication of parents and students required to go homeschool and the quality of education they receive. However, different school districts have different rules on how such homeschool students and alternative students can participate in sports at their local level. There can be confusion within a district. This issue came to a notable head in my district last year. A school employee mistakenly, and many believe negligently, cleared an IDEA school student in the Chief Jackson School Mustangs football team. When the error was discovered late in the season, the team had to forfeit their wins and their chance to compete in state championship playoffs. Now, for the record also, the team members showed a lot of class accepting this injustice and then going on to win their final two games. But this unfortunate episode did point out the need for Section 2 of this bill, which provides that a student who is enrolled in an educational alternative program who is otherwise completely eligible to play at his or her local high school can do so. It respects local school districts by ensuring students meet the school district's eligibility rules. It requires students and families to provide documentation of their athletes' eligibility. They must provide transcripts, they must provide proof of enrollment, proof of medical fitness, and any disciplinary actions that might impinge on their ability to play. And it also prevents students shopping. They can only play the school they would otherwise have attended, you know, your local school, you consider it, and they are barred from switching schools within a school year. In conclusion, HB 369 is, I believe, a very good bill that will help more young Alaskans enjoy the benefits of high school athletics, and it helps make it safer for them to do so. I'd be glad to answer your questions, and we have several folks online to testify in support and on the bill in general.
Thank you. Questions from committee? Representative Pruitt.
The one pushback I've got from some educators is some concern about the documentation requirements. Would you mind just expanding on it? What's going to be necessary there? Is this something that's going to be a bear to some of our administrators in the various schools to try to implement?
Through the chair, Representative Pruitt, I don't think it's going to be much of a barrier. There are currently requirements that student athletes verify their eligibility. Students both who attend a local private public school and those who are attending homeschools within a district must also provide proof of their eligibility. This bill does require parents and students to present to that local public school complete records on that would impinge on the student's eligibility. It might take a little bit of time, but as the situation in Chugiak has shown, it is necessary to take the time necessary to verify their eligibility. I don't think it will be an additional burden now.
Thank you, Representative Seaton.
Okay, Representative Seaton.
Thank you. On the eligibility section, let's say somebody was attending public school and their grades aren't going to be sufficient to maintain eligibility, and then they would decide to go to homeschool. And there's no longer requirements for showing tests and those kind of scores in an intermediate basis until you have the high school qualifying exam in grade 12. Can you tell me how that would work and why that wouldn't be something where we would have a out for somebody that wants to participate in sports and whose parents are willing to say they're homeschooling them, and then they would no longer be academically ineligible?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, are you concerned that someone who's a student attending a public school and wasn't making grades withdrew from the school, enrolled in a public school, then tried to come back and play on the team? Is that your concern?
That is, because once they're a homeschool student, they're no longer in an intermediate section of needing to show scores or tests or anything else. I see the high school qualifying exam, you have to pass that if you're a senior. But until you're a senior, it seems, and I'm just wondering, maybe it's all taken care of, but I don't see it taken care of.
Representative Seaton, the bill would require the students to provide their academic transcripts, which would show a withdrawal, either withdraw pass, withdraw fail, and they have to present that again to the school to show their eligibility. That you may have parsed a point where I couldn't give you a complete answer. The legislation on page 2, line 30 does require that a student so enrolled would be on track to graduate, and it could be inferred that there are intermediate progress steps. I couldn't say exactly how they would be documented. They would have to be enrolled in a certain number of credits. They couldn't be taking basket weaving in English, you know, 9 or something. They'd have to be taking 5 credits a year if they were a freshman, sophomore, junior, and at least 4 credits as a senior. So they'd have to have that progress. And if they were a senior, they would have passed colloquially called the exit exam, but I couldn't say specifically how they would have to document their progress from week to week or month to month in order to participate.
Representative Seaton?
Maybe somebody will be online to let us know whether homeschool students are actually taking by credits, or whether, you know, if that is a system that's required, and if there are tests or those kind of eligibility things that are currently required of homeschool students, and I'm not, yeah. I don't know the full answer to that, so I'd appreciate it.
The chair, we do have at least one parent who is scheduled to testify who has a very close familiarity, I believe, now with the eligibility requirements.
Thank you. Representative Sattler, I really like the idea of this this bill. I was the homeschool teacher for the Iditarod School District for years, so the whole idea of homeschooling I really believe in. I know a lot of homeschoolers step down out of homeschooling into college. They're so disciplined and so ready, so I really do support homeschooling. But I did have a couple of people ask me a question that I didn't have the answer for. We understand that homeschool is really saving the state a considerable amount of money. If those same homeschoolers went to a public school, the cost per student would be, you know, far greater. So by having homeschoolers, the state is saving a lot of money and generally getting an excellent education. But the question then is, if the homeschooler is getting the funding goes to the homeschool program, and to say if that student were to participate in a sport, let's say two get football, we'll make that up, what would there be any additional cost incurred to the Chugach School District that we would need to speak to?
Mr. Chairman, the Anchorage School District and Chugach High School, additional costs, the school district, at least in Anchorage, I can speak for Anchorage, does require students participating in secondary school athletics to pay an activity fee that does cover the cost of their participation. And certainly the uniforms, the footballs, the locker room, the field are all already provided. That's been funded already. I have evidence or information that indicates, $195 per activity for gymnastics, swimming, and diving, $185 for flag football, volleyball, cross country, $175 for tennis, cross country, et cetera. So there are fees that are charged to students must pay to participate in the high school sports, and secondary school students from homeschool would have to pay that.
Thank you. Representative Kawasaki.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Dan. So I'm getting hooked up on the second section of the bill dealing with activity eligibility. So if a student were part of a homeschool type program that was somewhere in the state, the parents live in, say, in downtown Fairbanks, the kid doesn't, and that school didn't offer interscholastic sports of any kind, or are we talking about like a specific program, like they wanted to take advantage of maybe their school doesn't teach hockey or have hockey, a hockey program, but they really wanted to play hockey? Would that mean that that kid would be eligible to play under that scenario?
I'm not sure if Clint Kawasaki is the point of your question, whether there's a disconnect between where the student lives and the parent lives.
Yeah, right.
That'd be a hard one. I'm not sure too many situations where that would operate. But on page 2, line 23, it specifies that, break back up, this does limit students to participating only in schools where they do reside and would otherwise attend. So their local attendance district, not that they might get a zone exemption kind of thing. So I think if that local school school did not offer a hockey team, you know, they couldn't do it. They would have to be living in a different, they would never play hockey. The student in question would have to live in the home attendance area of a high school that did provide hockey.
Okay. There's no other question. Oh, Representative Seaton?
I have one, and it's kind of a follow-up on the same, and hopefully the testifiers will be there. I know we've had a problem with football and hockey, which are larger team sports that were not offered near schools at the head of Kachemak Bay, and they could participate in some sports in their in the school in which they attend, but there was a change in the Alaska Association of ASA rules to allow them to attend at a different, the nearest school that offered that program. And so as this goes forward, would you check lines 15 and 16 and see if that restriction, the same school for, would include the current ASA regulations that allow them to attend a different school if their nearest school or their school that they attend does not offer that program. So I think there's been a change within the last 2 years. We worked awful hard to get it, that allowed participation in those team sports that weren't offered in the school. And I just want to make the same sure that the same school here is not, doesn't create an unintended consequence of a more restriction than currently allowed by ASA for those students.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, a fair question. I appreciate your defense of that. I believe on page 2, line 4, that first paragraph of section 2 does say that this addresses students who are enrolled in an alternative educational program inside the state and which program does not offer interscholastic sports is eligible to participate in a sports program available in the basically his local school. So I think the answer is if they were attending an alternative school at the head of the bay, they would be allowed to attend Homer High School and play football or hockey and so forth. And if they were participating in another sport in their school, that would be okay, because the qualifier is alternative school does not offer that sport. Okay. But that's a subspecialty. I'm going to actually probably defer to the ASA people online to testify as that
specific. And I appreciate that. And my question is whether number 3 on lines 15 and 16 limits that so that a student could participate in basketball at Vozesinka School, but since that's not the same school as the high school football, or as football or hockey, couldn't participate there. That's the question.
I will defer to the sports experts.
Thank you.
We're past the okay, Representative Wilson. We have people online. I apologize to people online. We will hear this bill again shortly. We'll hear this bill on Wednesday. So I apologize to people online. But we will take this bill up promptly on Wednesday, and we do look forward to your testimony. Representative Wilson, to wrap the meeting up.
I wanted to bring up on Section 1. Last year or the year before, I can't remember when we passed that, there was a group of people, and I can't remember who they were. I think they were physical therapists, but I'm not sure. And anyway, they were going to go around and make sure everyone was trained well. And I am concerned that we're taking out certified. Now, I realize that in some areas it's hard to get out to those areas. But I still, you know, I don't want somebody to go into their doctor and the doctor says to them, well, here's what you have to look for. And they hear it once and then that's it, and then they go out and do it. So I am concerned about that. Maybe we could leave certified out, but I still think that there's got to be some kind of verified in writing that they have had some kind of training. I think we have to be careful there. These are our kids that we're, and if we take out all of that, then we could have people that are saying, oh, well, you look like you're feeling good, go back in. So I just think we need to make sure that they're having some pretty good training in some way.
In response to hanging through the chair, Representative Wilson, a qualified person does mean a healthcare provider license in the state, so that implies a doctor or nurse practitioner who we assume has had training in head injuries. But the reason why they pulled out that certified set language is there is not a certification body in the state. Yeah. But I appreciate your concerns and share them.
Thank you, Representative Satner. On Wednesday, April 4, 8 a.m., we're scheduled to hear presentation by Craig School District, UA Board of Regents, confirmation hearing, and nothing but testimony on this wonderful Bill 369. So with that, Education Committee adjourned, 10:05.